listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the award-winning Institute of Culinary Education in the heart of New York City. ICE offers comprehensive career training programs in the culinary arts, pastry and baking arts, and culinary management in just 7 to 11 months. ICE also offers the largest program of hands-on recreational cooking, baking, and wine classes for all skill levels in your favorite global cuisines. Call 888-614-CHEF or visit iceculinary.com/heritage for more information. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Weitz. I'm an instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, coincidentally. And you're listening to the show, hopefully live tonight, on heritageradionetwork.com, broadcasting from behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So here's a question. Have you ever done any weaving? What's the past tense of weave? Wove? Have you ever wove? Well, anyway, you know, like on a loom, like with warp and weft and shuttle and all that. Those are weaving terms, FYI.
Past tense is weaved.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Who was that? God speaking? Oh, no, it's Jack, producer. Weaved. Have you ever weaved? Anyway, you know, like on a loom, on a big loom, or have you ever watched anybody weave? It's a pretty complex process. When I was a little kid, my aunt and uncle, who were quite a bit younger than my parents, lived up in Vermont in a house that they had built on a dirt road. They built it themselves, you know, very, very back to the land. They were like classic hippies, early 70s. They dropped out of city life, moved to the land, built a house, the whole thing. Heated it with wood, spent the entire summer chopping wood. And my aunt, Bella, was a weaver. She had gone to Pratt for fashion, textile stuff, and she was a weaver, and she had this gigantic loom in the house. Or at least, it seemed massive to me, because I was this little teeny tiny kid. And I was really in awe of the intricacy of all the strings and the moving parts, the utter complicatedness of it all. It reminded me of like looking inside of a grand piano with all the strings and the wires and the little blocks of wood and the pedals and stuff. I was very impressed by it. We actually also had friends at that time who had a grand piano, and I used to like to sit underneath it while somebody was playing and look up inside of it so I could see those little blocks and wires moving. It may explain the hearing loss that I feel like I have now. But anyway, Bella was a weaver, and she had this massive loom, and she weaved. That's what she did. And that's pretty admirable, because it's a hard thing to do. And my best friend, Lisa, who is a masterful knitter and crocheter, and spins her own wool and yarn from animals that, like, she knows, you know, on a first-name basis. She knows the animals whose wool she spins. She even quilts now, too. She tried to weave, and she was brought to her knees by weaving. She was humbled by weaving because she's so dyslexic, and weaving was just one fibery craft that she couldn't get her brain to wrap itself around. So I would say that we would all agree that weaving is pretty darn hard, very, very complex, right? I mean, I think so. So at ICE, where I teach the somewhat less complicated craft of cooking, the reason I'm getting to this is that in our French regional module of our professional program, we have a day where we explore the cuisine of Burgundy, you know, like Boeuf Bourguignon, Coq au Vin, Salade Lyonnaise, all that Burgundian stuff. And a couple of years ago, a recipe was added in. I don't know where it came from. Someone added it in, and it's called Cervelle de Canu, which means brains of the silk weavers. That's the name of the dish. It means brains of the silk weavers. Now, Burgundian / Lyonnaise cuisine is pretty rich, and it's full of meat. It's very heavy on the meat, especially the beef. So your first thought, which mine was, is, oh, cervelle, which means brains. I thought, oh, I know what we're making. We're making veal brains or calf's brains. you know, the French love that stuff. But what do the weavers have to do with it? Why are we making the brains of the weavers? Is there cannibalism among the textile workers of Burgundy? Is that what we're doing? Well, possibly. But in this case, no. The name refers to the silk weavers in Lyon a few centuries ago, who apparently were not held in the highest regard. They weren't considered the brightest and the best, these silk weavers. It's a very simple little preparation, this dish. It's a mix of fresh cheese, and the fresh cheese is like a fromage frais or farmer's cheese that you just mix with minced up shallots and herbs and usually a little bit of vinegar, some black pepper, and you serve it up with sliced baguette, and it's a little hors d'oeuvre, and it's pretty simple. It's pretty brainless to make, really, so to speak. I mean, even my dyslexic best friend, Lisa, you know, who could probably knit a fully functioning car out of wool, but can't scramble an egg, she could probably make it too. My other best friend, Wikipedia, says that the dish is a base of fromage blanc, seasoned with chopped herbs, shallots, salt, pepper, olive oil, and vinegar. Its name literally means silk worker's brain, after the Canuts, who were the silk workers of 19th century Lyon. And the name is thought to reflect the low opinion the affluent in Lyon had of the weavers. Okay, so I ask you again, have you ever tried to weave? Well, no. Well, Aunt Bella and Lisa aside, anybody else? No. If I represented the Weavers Union right now, I'd be pretty mad. I'd be out there with my spokesperson defending the silk weavers and demanding that the name of the recipe be changed. I'd have the ACLU reps out there with me too, because weaving is very complicated and very hard. And if those snooty rich Lyonnaise people were so fond of wearing the finest silks in the 19th century, they should have tried to weave it themselves first before they equated the brains of the weavers with a delicious cheese spread. Of course, I have a theory about the name of this dish, and or at least I have a theory about why the dish was named after the silk weaver's brains, that it was just this pile of mush. And maybe, just maybe, the silk weaver's brains were being destroyed from all the heavy metals and toxic pigments that were being used to dye the silk. Just a thought. I'm just saying that the 19th century textile industry was not exactly the model of the safe workplace. Think about like the Triangle shirtwaist fire. Think about no ventilation. Think about lead and mercury being used for dyes. Think of six-year-olds working 12-hour days in a sweatshop. Just a thought. So this dish, this cervelle de canut dish, which is basically just herby cheese spread, was named for these silk weavers in Lyon because they were thought to be kind of moronic and stupid. And I think that's really insulting and offensive to weavers, having never even attempted weaving myself, but seeing other people try it and either succeed or fail miserably. I have to say that maybe the dish needs to be renamed or reevaluated. It's a very simple little dish to make, much, much more simple than ever trying to handle the warp and the weft and the shuttle and the petals and all those fine, fine threads of silk that a silk weaver would have to handle. So anyway, let's leave this Lyonnaise dish, the brains of the silk weavers, behind in France with all those disgruntled weavers and talk about what I really wanted to get to, but usually don't actually get to, which is the point of the show until about halfway through. And that's fresh cheeses, young, fresh cheese, which is what this cervelle de canut dish is based on. It's based on fresh farmer's cheese. And farmer's cheese, or cheeses like fromage frais or fromage blanc or cottage cheese or paneer, these are all cheeses that are just made from heating up some milk and adding something to it to coagulate it, to curdle it. That's all it is. And then draining the curds from the whey. And then it's eaten fresh. It's eaten right away, which is why it's called fresh cheese, obviously. There's no culture added to it. There's no aging involved. It's just fresh as a pile of soft, lead-addled brain matter, so to speak. We have to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about the silk weavers and their brain and their cheese. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City. For more information, you can call 888-614-CHEF or visit iceculinary.com/heritage. Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. If you're a fan of the show, I would love for you to join us on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. And you can become a fan, comments, questions. I'd love to hear from you. You can also now leave comments on the Heritage Radio Network website. If you just go to Why We Cook and then scroll down to the comments page, I'd love to hear from you. So this week I'm talking about fresh cheese. Cheeses that are made and eaten right away. They're not aged. They're not cured. They're not salted. They're not put in caves for years. Nothing's done to them to promote longevity. They're just made and eaten right away. And I was talking about a dish in the first segment that comes from France that's a soft cheese that you mix with shallots and herbs and a little bit of vinegar, and you use it as a little cheese spread. It's actually the ancestor of Boursin. If you've ever bought Boursin in the store, Boursin is the industrialized commercial version of this dish, and the dish has this French name that means the brains of the silk weaver. And having known weavers in the past, I have to say that they are much, much more intelligent than a pile of mushy white cheese would ever imply. So for all the silk weavers out there, I'm a little offended. But anyway, we're leaving that behind. We're talking about fresh cheeses, farmer cheese, cottage cheese, paneer, fromage frais, all of that stuff. So all the dairying cultures in the world, all the world's great dairying cultures, of course, figured out ways to promote longevity in their milk. Somebody once called cheese milk's leap toward immortality. And that's what cheese is. It's a way of taking your milk and doing something to it so it doesn't spoil way back when, in the days before refrigeration and pasteurization, you had to figure out ways to make your food last. And that's what cheese is. That's what yogurt is. All those cured and fermented and processed milk products. And so all dairying cultures who make cheese also make some form of soft cheese. It was a quick way to use up the extra milk after you made your butter for the day or other cheeses. And it was also a good way to add protein to meals. It didn't require any long-term storage commitments or waiting around for ripening. You didn't have to kill an animal. You could just do it right away. And I'm a big fan of cottage cheese and farmer's cheese. They are two big players in my breakfast repertoire. If you've listened to the show, you know that I'm a big breakfast fan. And part of this is that I like some protein in the morning. I need to eat some protein when I first get up. And those two are really good for that. They give it to me in a lower calorie sort of delivery system than if I ate like a big hunk of cheddar or something like that, mostly because they still contain so much water, which if you age a cheese, you gradually remove more and more water, and so it gets denser and denser, and you eat more of it by volume because there's less water in it. Cottage cheese is the perfect example of a young, fresh cheese, and if you press cottage cheese to remove the whey, it becomes farmer's cheese. That's kind of the only difference. Farmer cheese is drier, more solid. Makes like a good spread. You can make that cervelle de canut out of it. And I, of course, like to put it in oatmeal because I like to put everything in oatmeal. You can actually buy it in big blocks at Fairway. They'll cut off a chunk of it for you. Or other markets, I'm sure, if you don't live in New York. And it's cheap. It's good. But I'd really like to find a source for organic farmer cheese because I buy my milk organic and I buy organic yogurt. And so I feel sort of like a hypocrite because I'm then buying this industrially produced non-organic cheese. So if anybody knows a source for organic farmer cheese, let me know. Send me an email. And when it comes to cottage cheese also, it's tricky to find organic. There's one or two brands out there, but there's a really good brand of cottage cheese that I found at Whole Foods recently called Nancy's that is cultured like yogurt. So it's cottage cheese, but it has this great tang like yogurt. And I just tried it and it's great. So people from Nancy's are out there hearing this. You got a fan on this show. And cottage cheese is kind of an interesting thing. It comes in a couple variations. We think of it as just this one plain old thing, but do you ever notice you can buy small curd and large curd cottage cheese? It can also, though, be filled with all kinds of crap and garbage ingredients. So you have to read the labels really carefully. I was in a store a couple weeks ago, and I read all the cottage cheese labels, and geez, there was a lot of crap in there. I mean, a label for a dairy product like that should just read milk, rennet, and salt, or milk, culture, acetic acid, and salt. That should be it. And yet, there was crazy stuff in there. Why do I need titanium dioxide in my cottage cheese? Titanium dioxide, you know what that is? That's white paint. If I wanted to eat white paint, I would open up a tube of white acrylic paint and put it on my spoon. I don't need titanium dioxide in my cheese. It's a white pigment. I don't need to eat that. Anyway, the curd size in cottage cheese is like the size of the chunks. So if you like big chunks or small chunks in your cottage cheese. And to get small curd cottage cheese, this is kind of interesting. I didn't know this. Small curd cottage cheese has higher acid. It's a high acid cheese that's made without rennet, which we'll get to in a minute, what rennet is. And large curd, low acid cottage cheese is made with rennet. So basically, to turn milk into cheese, you just add acid to it, or rennet. And what that does is it coagulates the milk protein. The milk proteins just clump together, and that's your curd. And then the liquid separates out, and that's your whey. That's all it is. So if you use acid to make cottage cheese like lemon juice or vinegar, you'll get small curd. And if you use rennet, you get large curd. I never knew that. Research is an amazing thing. Anyway, rennet is this enzyme. You may know what it is, but it's an enzyme that speeds up the curdling process and keeps the curd that forms from breaking up. It keeps it clumpy. And adding it shortens the cheese-making process, so you can result in a lower acid product, basically, and a larger curd in your cottage cheese. But when you add rennet or anything, like I said, acidic to milk, your proteins are going to coagulate. So you'll get this curd, and you'll get the whey. And remember Little Miss Muffet? Remember her? She was such a wuss, you know? She was so girly. But that's what she was eating, her curds and whey. She was eating cottage cheese. But the poet, you know, the rhyme sounds better. Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet eating her cottage cheese. Doesn't sound as good. So rennet and acid are used to make milk coagulate. And then usually if you're going to continue the process, you add some kind of bacterial culture that'll add flavor and acidity, and it'll kind of start that cheese on its journey toward cheesedom. But you can also just use the lemon or vinegar or rennet. But your cheese can be pretty bland without any sort of bacterial culture added to it. And rennet, let's get back to rennet for a minute, because rennet's kind of a brilliant thing and a brilliant discovery. Maybe one day I'll do a whole show on it. But if you don't know what rennet is, it's actually an enzyme that's found in the stomach of young calves. Very nice. And it helps them digest milk. So basically the calves drink the milk from their moms, and the rennet in their stomach turns it into cheese, and then they digest that cheese. And we humans somehow long ago discovered that if we kill the calf and take a piece of its stomach out and extract the rennet from the stomach and add it to milk, we can make cheese on our own. And that's brilliant. That's so smart. But there are ways to make cheese without rennet too, because obviously if you want to make like a kosher cheese or a vegetarian cheese, you can't throw a piece of cow's stomach in it. So there are other ways to coagulate milk. There are vegetable rennets, which are kind of cool. There's a cheese from Portugal, this crazy cheese called azeitão or azeitão cheese from Portugal that is made from artichoke rennet. And you can actually extract these enzymes from plants that act the same way as rennet. So there's this artichoke rennet. You put it in milk and you make this cheese, and it's this weird cheese. It's got kind of like a bouncy jellied texture, and it sort of has like a vegetal taste to it, but it's good. It's kind of weird, but it's good too. You should look for it. But like I said, you can also use acid, so you could just add lemon juice or vinegar, and that's what paneer is if you've eaten Indian cheese, which is paneer. That's all it is. Just add acid to milk and you get your curds and your whey, and you can be Indian Little Miss Muffet and make your paneer. So we're gonna take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk even more about the fresh cheese. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Remember that you can listen live to this show every Tuesday night at 6:30 on heritageradionetwork.com. But if you happen to miss the show live, you can always listen to any of our shows anytime, archived on the website, or you can find them all on iTunes. And now the shows are categorized also. So all of my shows are categorized under food podcasts. And you can subscribe so that every week I just wind up in your inbox just like that without you even having to try. And what a gift that is to have me in your inbox every week. So you have many options when it comes to listening to these shows. You don't have to catch us live like other radio because this is internet radio and the internet gives you a lot of options. So we're talking about fresh cheeses tonight. Young, fresh cheese. Basically, you take milk, you add some kind of acid to it, and boom, you have cheese. It coagulates. The curd separates from the whey, and that's what it is. Do you ever wonder what they do with all of that whey from the cheesemaking process? No, probably not. Well, they take it, and they either feed it to livestock, or they dehydrate it and use it to make things like power bars and whey protein for bodybuilders. So there you go. It all gets used. So we were talking about cottage cheese in the earlier segment, and I don't know. I love cottage cheese. People either love it or hate it. I think you have to grow up with it. Some people find it kind of gross, but I think it's really good. It's sort of soft and creamy and cool, and it's very adaptable, cottage cheese. It's sort of a blank slate, so you could make it sweet with fruit, with honey. You could do it savory. You could put herbs in it. I like to put in, you know, herbs and black pepper. Sometimes I mix a little miso in there. Actually, the other day I had pumpernickel toast that I spread with miso, and then I put cottage cheese on it, and then I sprinkled on some chopped up basil. Now, I know it sounds a little bizarre, but it was actually really good. I had that for breakfast. But anyway, so if you want to make your own cottage cheese, you take a whole bunch of milk, you add a little bit of rennet or acid to it, and you can buy rennet. It's easy. You used to be able to buy rennet in the supermarket. You remember something called junket? Junket was this weird puddingy stuff that they used to sell in the supermarket. It was a rennet custard. I don't think they even sell it anymore, but if you look online, you can buy rennet tablets from cheesemaking supply companies. It's pretty easy to get. Anyway, so you make your own cottage cheese. You just curdle some milk, basically. And then you just eat it fresh, just like that. But if you take that cottage cheese and you drain it out and then you press it, you get what's called pot cheese. Pot cheese. And if you press it even further, you get farmer cheese. And then if you take it and you really press it and then you maybe soak it in a little bit of cold water, you have paneer, which is the Indian version of all this, which can then be cut up into little cubes and cooked in curry, sauteed, fried, things like that. And if you grew up, like I did, eating blintzes, like I had, you know, Jewish grandmother, we ate a lot of blintzes. The cheese ones, that's what they're filled with. That's farmer cheese. Or in pierogies, same thing. It's farmer cheese inside of the blintzes. And it shows up all over the world, too. If you've ever eaten Neufchâtel, like French Neufchâtel cheese, that's a form of ripened farmer cheese, just young but ripened, and paneer, like I mentioned. But paneer is usually curdled not with rennet but with acid so that it's vegetarian, like vinegar or lemon juice. And ricotta also is a form of fresh cheese, but ricotta is made a little bit differently. It's made from the whey that's left over after mozzarella is made. So first the milk is curdled, coagulated, and the curd is pressed, and the whey separates, of course, out. But that whey is reserved. The curd is then melted and stretched, and that's how you make mozzarella. The whey that remains is then mixed with more milk and more cream and more rennet, and it's recooked. And that's where the name ricotta comes from. It's recooked, and you get your fresh ricotta that way. So it's got a similar kind of texture, but it's made in a totally different way. But with any of these cheeses, you can press them and drain them. And the more you press them, the firmer the final product becomes. So you can buy ricotta impastata, which is drained ricotta, and it's not as wet. And that's what you use to make like cannoli filling Or if you're like doing a stuffed pasta dish, you could use that because it doesn't have as much water in it. And you can also take your pressed cheese, cut it into cubes, and soak it for a couple hours in cold, salty water. And that'll firm it up too. And that's like paneer. And if you've ever eaten feta, feta is a cheese that you make the same way. You take sheep's milk and coagulate it. But then the feta gets put in a brine for a while. And the brine kind of cures it, firms it up too. But they all start out the same way. And it's all just basic cheese making. Simple, basic coagulating of milk. It's the same idea with yogurt. We talked about yogurt a few weeks ago. You just start out with a starter culture. Something that's going to work on the milk. Same idea. So it's pretty simple. It's nothing like silk weaving, for example, which is very complicated. If you've been listening to the whole show, we talked about silk weaving in the first segment. Much harder than cheese making. And you can easily make your own fresh cheese. The real challenge for cheese making happens after you make the curds, when you start the whole process of aging cheeses and inoculating them with all kinds of molds and cultures and bacterias and putting them in caves and wrapping them in chestnut leaves and burying them in the ground. And there's a billion, zillion variations on cheese making. So fresh cheese is really simple, really easy to do, really brainless. Aged cheeses, they're not so much a job for an amateur. They're maybe more of a job for like a silk weaver, someone who's better at more complex processes. Anyway, that's enough about fresh cheeses. A little final note here, give you a little bee update. If you've been listening to the show, you know that I have a beehive now, and it's here at the radio station. It lives on the roof of the building just next to the radio station, and the bees seem to be doing pretty well. I checked on them last week, and they seem pretty happy. The queen has come out of her little queen cage, and they're starting to fill up some of their cells, and looks like they're laying some eggs from what I can see. I've been feeding them. They're drinking their little bee tea sugar syrup. So the bees seem to be coming along pretty well. So I'll be giving you bee updates as we move our way further into the spring. Although it's been so cold here this week that I don't think the bees have left the hive once. But they're okay. They have plenty of food and they're doing well. So we're just about out of time. Thank you for listening to Why We Cook this week. Thanks to Nat and Jack in the control tower. And we'll see you next week.